Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I am Jim Galante. With me, Executive Director and the brains behind HVU Insider, Mike Villagrana. Mike, how we doing, bud?
Hey, we're doing great, Jim. Another week down. Summer's flying, and now we're in the game week. This is week zero, which I hate. I think it's very stupid that we call it week zero. It's week one, people. Like, what are we doing? Just another microcosm of how dumb college football people are. But yeah, here we are talking about it.
It doesn't matter how dumb they are. It doesn't matter how ridiculous the rules, the eligibility. None of that matters, Mike, once they start playing the games.
Yeah, no doubt. It's idiot-proof, as a lot of people will say, the college game. You know, you'll forget about all of this once you're dialed into your team. It doesn't even need to be your team. You know, we were just talking off air. Like, we don't even care. You know, we got another 2 weeks because we don't play week zero. We play week one. So the week zero games are going to be fun to watch. You know, there's a couple games that I'm interested in looking at. But, yeah, I'm excited. But it's so funny with how dumb college football is, the business, that still continues to be the talk of non-football, right, of non-football stuff. With the eligibility. Ruling coming in last Friday or last week saying, you know, these NFL guys can't play now, but they can play. But it depends on the state that, you know, it's just we still are talking about that. But like you said, no matter what, come, you know, Friday or Saturday, week zero, we'll forget about it all because we love college football and it's idiot proof.
Well, you know, it's funny you talked about those rulings from last week. I'm usually pretty good on those. I like to read up on them, figure out what's going on, try to understand it. But last Friday just kind of blew my mind. I think there were multiple rulings on the same day. Not eligible, eligible, like you said, based on state or a local ruling. I you know what? I don't even want to try and figure it out anymore. I'm just waiting to see, okay, if some, you know, does Jalen Hurts end up starting in college for somebody, you know, or something ridiculous like that. I'm just waiting for that, Mike.
Yeah, but I'm glad, you know, Coach Campbell and some other coaches, I know Coach Freeman at Notre Dame, they came out publicly and said, you know, our roster is our roster. We're not going to go out and try to, you know, grab somebody last minute. There's just so many things that, you know, I don't think it's worth the squeeze when it comes to these coaches. You know what I mean? At the point where you're at right now, you're a week in, week out from a game. Like, that just doesn't make sense. So I'm glad Penn State's not looking to do that because there's just so many things that could, like I said, could screw it up. You know, from the culture, bringing in somebody new, you know, out of nowhere, hasn't been with the team, you know, he's going to take a spot. You know, there's going to be – yeah, there's just a lot that goes into that. I saw the Notre Dame defensive end that – he was on a team, but he got released. He's got a Hawaiian name. But he entered the transfer portal, and now he's transferring to LSU. So just fascinating. Like, I don't even know. I've been in the game. But, like, I've worked as a recruiter, and I've had to go through all the logistics of adding a transfer player. And it is a pain in the butt, and especially when it comes to admissions. And then you have to deal with academia people that don't really care about football. You know, that you got to pull strings there. It's just I can't imagine going through the process of adding a player right now. But either way, it's happening. But we'll see. I guess we'll see at the end of the season and for the teams that do pick them up if it was worth it or not.
Well, the one thing that you haven't hit on that's actually part of the equation is it's a financial question. You know, the reason why these guys want another year of eligibility is to make the money that comes with it. And I think a lot of schools, they're already maxed out. You know, they've spent their money. Yes, you could always, you know, place that phone call to the rich alum and say, hey, we'd really like this guy. We need $1 million to get him back on the roster. But also now you've got rosters that have been practicing for 3 weeks in fall camp. How do you bring, you know, a new guy up to speed that fast? And, yes, hopefully it won't interrupt much as far as college football. And the other thing I want to point out, because you know I'm the first guy in the world, Mike, to throw the NCAA under the bus, okay? Yeah. They've done so many self-inflicted wounds, as I like to say. They have no more toes yet left to shoot off, okay? Because they've shot themselves in the foot so many times. But now the issue is more with court rulings. You know, somebody outside of football, some judge in East Podunk somewhere who knows nothing about the game is making decisions like this for the entire country.
Yeah, it's just a mess. It is just an absolute complete mess. And it's a joke, you know what I mean? Like, it's just – and it's a joke it's lasted this long. It's come to – you know, we're in the season, and the Save College Act or whatever it's called, you know, that's been put on hold now that Congress and the government's in recess, and then, you know, they're going to have midterms, so they're not going to – there's a lot of other things in the world that are going on other than college football that they're going to be worried about. So that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. So I guess that's just – like at this point, like, I don't even think as a college fan you could be frustrated. It's almost just like it's like laughable that all this stuff is continuing to happen, and it's just it sucks. But again, it is idiot proof. So when we, you know, September 5th, we're going to be through and through dissecting our Penn State Lions and excited to talk about it.
You're exactly right. Who will care in another week when they start playing the games? All right, hey, how about we talk about the actual team, Mike? And here was my thought for today. The word for today is depth, okay? I've been thinking about this, and full disclosure, I read an article, and I don't even know where it was, but like one of these national articles talking about the season, and you know, a review of Penn State's team, they said, well, everyone's got to stay healthy because of the lack of depth. And I started to think about that. I'm not so sure that's the case. And, you know, we had some news in the last week or so that I think also reinforces some of the depth. Let me start with the quarterback position. Boy, was that amazing news about backup quarterback Alex Mansky. He's healthy. We're hearing all these good things about how he's playing. I've been worried, you know, if Rocco Beck goes down, what do you have in support of him? The reports have been great on Mansky, but even more fascinating is the medical issue where he had open heart surgery. As someone who knows a little bit about heart issues, that's pretty amazing that he's back 100% going.
Yeah, it's a great story. And I know there was a lot of speculation, a lot of questions surrounding his status because, you know, he was here. He was a pretty highly touted kid coming in with Coach Campbell and the staff. Us talking, just remember me. I always brought it up, me and my conversations with Trace McSorley and his evaluation of him. And, you know, everybody around that building talked very highly of him. So, you know, there was just it was just kind of weird. Didn't hear anything, didn't know exactly what it was. And then when it comes out, it's just when you hear these stories, I mean, this is what it's all about, man. Right. Like, you know, coming back, you know, adversity, things are going to be tough. You know, that's Coach Campbell's, not just Coach Campbell's message, but a lot of coaches' messages, you know, with kids in college going through this process of being a student athlete. You know, there's going to be tough times, right? Now, Alex Mansky, this is a whole other extreme of tough times. Like, holy crap, to be able to go through this. And not only to be able to go through that, you know, for him to come into camp and then excel like he is in camp, that's a great story, man. And not only a great story, that has to make us and Penn State fans feel pretty good about the quarterback room.
It really does. And just as an aside, for those who aren't familiar with the story and how it happened, Alex Mansky, he took at Penn State, they routinely do certain tests for incoming student athletes. And apparently it was not something they did at Iowa State. Now, that doesn't make things bad at Iowa State. It just says they happened to do this test, some of the heart function, and they randomly found it because he had no symptoms of it. and you know, a dilated aortic root. I mean, in English, just a valve coming out of the aorta was expanded and had the potential to rupture. That's amazing. And then open heart surgery to fix it. And as amazing as the medical technology is, I admire the kid's courage after going through that to step back on a football field. And, you know, not to make any comparison, but, you know, I went through some heart issues, had nothing as serious as that. But the first time I did anything after that, I'm like, okay, am I capable of running? Am I capable of exercising? What's going to happen? You know, every little thing you feel. Now, for him, now open heart surgery is a whole different world that he went through. You know, you rip the guy open to do this, and he's back playing football and getting hit by people. To me, I'm just amazed, Mike.
Yeah, he's going to be a fan favorite, that's for sure, with Penn State fans. And not only Penn State fans, say down the line, you know, Rocco Beckos has a great year this year and graduates, and Alex Mancy becomes the man. I just can see just the love and affection for this kid is going to be extreme. But due to his circumstances and our fan base, you know, our fan base, I think any kind of fan base really would love this type of story. And it's easy to root for him no matter what team he's on. But especially, you know, a blue collar, tough, gritty type of fan base like Penn State fans are, you know, they're going to really embrace this kid, especially knowing now what he had to go through. Just amazing. Amazing. And I don't know much about the medical field at all. That's just a whole nother like foreign thing to me. But especially when you talk about the heart though, like that is like really scary. Anytime anybody brings up the heart to me, like I don't know much, but I know that that's just very scary. My grandfather went through some stuff with his heart. And so I just know it's a very, very scary situation. So good for Alex, and you know, kudos to the team, keeping it up and under wraps and everything. You know, so it was, just, you know, pounding back to everybody involved, and especially Alex and his team, the medical team that, you know, got him to where he is. It's really just amazing.
It really is. And the fact is, he's been very impressive on the field by all report. And that's very comforting also. As a Penn State fan, you feel confident that if something does happen to Rocco Beck, not necessarily a season-long injury, but just something that might take him out for a game, that you have someone there ready to take over. All right, yeah. Mike, that's it for quarter number one. When we come back, I'm going to talk depth at some other positions. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I'm Jim Galante, with me Mike Villagrana, quarter number two of our show. And Mike, I said the operative word of the day is going to be depth, and we're going to talk about that. We talked, rightfully so, quite a bit about Alex Mancy in quarter one. Just amazing. Open heart surgery. He's back. He's playing 100%. Not much rust. Apparently, he looks great. It also led I'm not sure if it's related in any way. Mancy's back, healthy, brings more depth at quarterback. They make the move, Peyton Falzone, now a tight end, which I think is a great move. But it also then, I think, leads to a conversation about the tight end position. Might be as much depth there, Mike, as anywhere on the field.
We keep talking about this room, and it's legit. It's just as good as it was last year, or better, I think. Because now you have guys that are proven. You have you know, Brommer, and you have Burkle, who are coming back or coming here from Iowa State, and they're proven, right? You know, they're one of the top two or top three, two of the top three leading receivers for Iowa State last year. So you have proven guys there, and I think Brommer was an all Big 12 selection, and then you got Rapule, who you know, I love. He's like one of my favorite players. I think he's like a Jeremy Shockey. And then you got some younger guys behind him, behind those three. But those three will be the main three that we'll be watching this year for sure. But like we talked about it last week, it's going to be interesting to see how Coach Mauser and his multiple personnels and formations, how he can get creative with these guys and get them open and, you know, get them the ball. So it's going to be fun to see. But, yeah, this is one of the best probably tight end rooms in the country.
I would have to think so. And the nice thing about it is you mentioned the three. I think Cooper Alexander could be another player who can make his way onto the field. And it to me, it's so well related to the running back situation also, where you are definitely three deep and maybe even four deep there with Carson Henson, James Peoples, Quentin Martin. And, you know, we're getting the reminder because he's looking good in a camp, Cam Wallace. Yeah. So it feels the same way that they're four deep back there also, Mike.
Yeah, it almost feels like James Peoples and Quentin Martin are kind of like, kind of battling for that number two almost. It's another position that's deep, and it's going to be fun to see how Coach Mauser uses them, because they're all good, and then all there's not a drop off if one goes out and the other comes in. They're all good, and they're all good in their own right. So, but yeah, I think the battle for number two is kind of interesting to me, because I think Peoples, I think Peoples is the best all around natural running back out of the three. He's kind of my favorite if I had a bet on a horse, but Quentin Martin, I think, is really kind of putting up a fight for that right now too, which is great, right? Like, so you have three really good running backs that are having good camps, and then you throw in Cam Wallace, you know, which is another great story. He didn't have open heart surgery, but coming off with two knee injuries, and then last year flashing and, you know, hurtling over that guy in that game, and now he's coming in having a good camp. You know, we had the pleasure of interviewing him. I think you did. So, you know, he's a great kid, like a lot of these guys, so it's easy to root for him. But, yeah, another healthy room by far. But another one really kind of see – now I'm, like, having PTSD from last year, because we had a great tight end room. We had a good running backs room, but we couldn't ever get in a rhythm. So it's going to be interesting to see how Coach Mauser and Coach Campbell puts it together.
Well, part of it is, I think – how they were used. I still don't believe that Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, and especially Nick Singleton, was not used correctly. Okay. I don't think they maxed out his capabilities, and we hope that's different. But hitting on the running backs, it's Carson Henson seems to be the default starter. Okay. That's the guy who will get the first carry, most likely. But I could listen to and accept an argument that James Peoples or Quentin Martin might be the best of the group. And I could even accept an argument for someone who might say, you know, I think James Peoples and Quentin Martin are the two best running backs. And that's not an insult to Carson Henson. It's just a remark on how good and deep this backfield is.
Yeah, and like I said, they're all kind of a little bit different. Like, I think Carson is – I think he has deceptive speed, you know, like and he's kind of the guy, like, every down back to me. Like, he's going to get you those tough yards, not to say that the other two can't, but that's going to be his kind of his niche. And then you could just always count on Carson. And then the other guys to come in and spell for him are kind of those guys that can make those big splash plays, potentially. You know, they can hit the home run. Not that Carson can't. I just think those guys are more maybe probably have more of a skill set that they can make those home runs, big splash plays.
Well, what it leads to, and we're going to hit the wide receiver room shortly, but I wanted to tie the tight ends and running backs together. You talked about, you know, multiple formations, multiple personnel sets, And the tight ends and the running backs, very similarly, you know, you're not limited to one of them on the field. Okay. And we know Mauser, just like us, loves the tight ends and will put multiple tight ends out there. But it's also the possibility of multiple running backs. Like, I feel like the running backs and tight ends are probably vying with each other for more time on the field.
Yeah, and I think if you saw reports coming out of practice last week, there was an emphasis on the running backs getting the ball out of the backfield. So I think you're going to see them used in the backfield, not just, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, but, you know, actually fields down the field or passes down the field. So I think that's going to be exciting. It just makes us more versatile. It makes me more excited to see exactly what we're going to get on September 5th. But we sure do have the weapons and the bullets to use, you know. So I'm excited for this. I think Mauser has a good demeanor about himself. I think these kids want to play for Mauser and the rest of the staff offensively. And I'm excited about this, what this crew is going to bring. But, yeah, like you said, back to your point with the running backs, between them and the tight ends, like, there's so many different ways that they're going to be able to get them. Like, we talked about the tight ends splitting out, you know, having four tight ends in a formation, but they're all split out, you know, just multiple things to throw defenses off. That's just an advantage for us.
Okay, Mike, I'm making you the offensive coordinator here. So giving you the promotion. Okay. You've got minimum three weapons at tight end. You got minimum three weapons at running back. You know who the personnel are in those two positions. How do you take full advantage of that? Where are you going to put these people? And even give me examples of situations, you know, on third and one, this is what we would do. On first and 10, this is what I would look to do. I'm curious. You got all these tools in the shed. How do you make best use of them, Mike?
You know what? One of my favorite offenses that I've ever watched college football was the year Auburn won the national championship with Cam Newton. And Malzahn's offense, really, like, he had been running that offense forever. But, that was when everybody kind of found out Malzahn and his offense and the different quirks or different nuances to it. But, yeah, him, the way that he was able to use, like, a fullback and, like, say you had, you know, four receivers out there. Well, it might only be one receiver out there, and it might be a tight end out there. It might be a running back out there, and then he would motion them back to the backfield, and then, hell, you might have a tight end and a running back there. You might have a tight end and another, or you might have two running backs back there. But just being able to, like, motion that guy back and forth, you know, I think is kind of a tool. It's kind of like a Swiss Army knife, like being able to motion those guys back and forth because these guys are so multiple. So the tight ends are multiple, all of them. They can do it all. They're all well-rounded tight ends. Just like we talked about the running backs, are all multiple. They can catch out of the backfield. So to be able to move those guys around with motions and start them out, you know, wide as a wide out, an X receiver, and then motion them back in. Like, that screws people up. I'm not saying that's what Coach Mauser is going to do, but I loved how that when Mauser had that certain type of personnel, he was able to really kind of take advantage of that. And I think, you know, depending on how Mauser uses these guys, he's going to be able to take advantage of defenses the same way.
Well, we've even heard, you know, conversation that a tight end could be end up in the backfield, a lead block or something like that. But if this is the same guy, you could put him in the slot, you could put him out wide. All of a sudden, I would imagine the defense has to, who's covering who, okay? And now you would give the quarterback the option, okay, what matchup do I like? Did I set this up where I have my huge tight end with some little cornerback covering him? Or do I have a running back now split out with some lumbering linebacker trying to cover him? You know, we used to see this with Saquon Barkley, and it was just an obvious mismatch. So do you do that, and do you put people in motion to expose those mismatches, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. But I think there's a funny balance between doing the motions and doing it too much. Right. I think Coach Moorhead's last year, you know, we were a fast paced offense. But if you go back and look at it, a lot of the times we were, you know, hurrying to the line of scrimmage to get set. But we were doing so much motioning and so much checking with the checking to the sideline for the play. They wanted to check it to another play or keep the play that was on, that, you know, by, you know, five seconds of the clock going to zero every time, you know. So it was like the defense was able to kind of reset checks. Like, I think it's a game of chess, right? And I think we have the good players on our team that we have the advantage in this game of chess, because I think we're going to be able to outmatch most of the teams that we play. Not all of them, but most of the teams that we play.
It's going to be really interesting to see. And again, I always look at outside the offensive line and the quarterback, everybody's a weapon, you know, tight ends, wide receivers, running backs. How many good weapons do I have and how many can I get onto the field at the same time? And I do think with the advantage of having all those tight ends, all those running backs available to you. When we come back, though, Mike, I want to ask about, you know, that other position, which is part of this weaponry, it's wide receivers. Let's talk about that when we come back. I think we've got two guys that we feel pretty good about. How about beyond that? I'm going to ask Mike that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at Happy Valley United. I'm Jim Galante. And Mike, we're talking about this Penn State team, and it's fantastic. We're less than 2 weeks away from that first kickoff, which is exciting. Just as a quick aside for that opener, 3:30 game. I believe you and I have talked about this. 3:30 is the right time for a game.
Yeah,
noon is too early. Night games, I'm an old guy. I have that long drive home. Give me 3:30 games. I love it that the opener's at 3:30.
Yeah, I like it. But you know what? I lied a little bit. I kind of like 12 o'clock games too, because I go back all the way to like my playing days. We loved 12 o'clock games, especially if it was like we loved 12 o'clock games if it was like we were playing an FCS opponent or
yeah.
Somebody we knew we were going to beat and it wasn't going to be a hyped up game, because you're getting out of there quick. Then you can go have dinner with your family real quick, and then you can have your fun time. All right, so we always that's why we really like the 12 o'clock games. But as a fan, I still like the 12 o'clock games too. It smells a little bit different in the tailgate box.
Yeah.
You know, you smell some breakfast
tailgate.
It's a different smell, but it's a little bit colder. It's a little bit brisk. It's something about that I like. In the early games. But yeah, you're right. The 3:30, you just get past, you know, that cold morning, and everything starts warming up a little bit. And then, you know, you get all those, you get everybody out. Everybody is out and it's all white. And it's just, yeah, this place is so special on game days. Now I'm getting all excited about, walking through, the tailgates, on the 5th, but yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. come 3:30, but the night games, I don't like. I like when the night games are actually happening, right?
Yeah.
Imagine as a player, like you're from Friday, you practice all week, right? You got school, you got practice meetings all week, and then you just want to play. Right? By the time Friday comes, you just want the game to come. But now you got Friday, you got meetings all day. You know, depending if it's an away game or not, you got travel, and then you got meetings at the hotel, meals, and then the next day it's just it's like a it's like a challenge for the coaches to make sure that the players don't get too rusty. They're not sitting on their ass all day. You know, it's but and it's just the waiting stinks for the night games. But for as a fan, now I know that's a little bit different for the tailgate scenes. We love our 8 o'clock games around here.
Well, that tailgating all day, I love. The night, the atmosphere, it's just when I hit the parking lot and it's already, you know, 11:30 and I've got your battle traffic getting out of the parking lot. And then I still have a couple hours to drive along Interstate 80 to get home. That's when I regret the night games, Mike, making that drive.
You know what I think about now as I get older, as a mature adult, you know, I at the games last year, we had a station and it was by the EMS, the Bud Light Beer Garden, right? So okay. I had the advantage to be able to see all the drunk people that get into the EMS. Those night games, man, it's a revolving door. It's crazy. And then with the students, you know, they you know, we like to promote that they're responsible with this, but gate A is where these guys go in. Every time, it doesn't matter, 12, 3:30 or night game, these guys, they Penn State fans, kids, they get after it, man. They know how to tailgate. And it's their parents too, right? Like their parents
are
out of tailgate, so – I guess it's just that lineage and that passing it down of how to be a Penn State fan comes with it.
I got to share with you, this was many years ago, and I'd come in with my family. We would traditionally, that sheets, the exit off 99 prior to getting to the game, we'd stop there, stop at Sheets, get the coffee, get a drink, get a snack or something before heading to the game. And there was a bus that had stopped there also, and I think it was from Hazleton, I think. But anyway, for a noon game, Mike, okay, so this is probably like 10 a.m. or maybe even 9 a.m., okay, getting there early enough so we could tailgate. So it's 9 or 10 in the morning, and there are multiple people in the restroom drunk as can be, getting sick. And I'm thinking, you haven't even gotten to the field yet. You've been drinking the whole bus trip in, you know, probably about two and a half hour bus trip, and you're already sick. And, you know, like I said, you haven't even started your tailgate yet. That's someone who started a little too fast.
Yeah, that sucks. It ruins the whole experience, right? Like, you want to at least make it to half, right? You want to be able to come in and, you know, see the team run out, see the blue band. You want to see all of that, the tradition. So that sucks. Every time, like, anytime you're around gate A or the north tunnel, or no, the south tunnel, that's where all the students are. When you go through that side, man, you're going to see some things. because as we do promote, you know, responsible drinking, some of them, they don't act on that.
Well, I will like a drink, okay? I will admit that. But for tailgating, I would put myself on a limit, and I'd like to stop like an hour before game time. And I usually have like a 2-drink limit.
Yeah.
Hour before the game. I want to watch the game. I truly want to watch the game and see what's going on and, you know, be at my best mental state there. Some of the people, it's just that's not what they're there for. All right, let's get back to the team, Mike. We were talking about the depth at running back, at tight end. We're going to see formations with multiple of each of those positions. Every time there's an extra tight end, an extra running back, that means probably there are fewer wide receivers. And I'm the one who tells everybody who says, oh, Penn State can never have good wide receivers. And I'm saying, intellectually, you can't take what happened last year or the year before and compare it to this year. The room has changed. The position coach has changed. The offensive coordinator has changed. The head coach has changed. Nothing that happened last year is related to this year. But we've got a little PTSD about wide receivers. And so let's talk about that wide receiver room and the depth that they have. We feel pretty good about Brett Eskelson and Chase Soule have starting experience at Iowa State. They're coming in. They're the definitive one and two, I believe.
Yep.
Who should we look for? Are there more? Is there more depth? Is there that third receiver, fourth receiver that could make a mark this year?
Well, yeah, I think, well, we've been talking, especially the fans have been talking about Kobe Howard since last year, wanting to see more of him. So I think we're going to see him in the rotation consistently. I think the guy that's popped up, that's had a great camp, probably has helped himself more than anybody, is Amarian Jackson, a guy that could probably play both sides of the ball. Which says a lot about his athleticism and his versatility. So to have a guy like that is awesome. And then also to see him in the rotation is great. So I think he was, you know, kind of battling Peter Gonzalez, who I think is going to be a redshirt sophomore this year. You know, he's coming off a couple of injuries, but he did flash a couple times in off-season workouts. So, but it looks like Omarion's kind of winning that battle right now. But the one that I'm really excited about, probably biasly because we interviewed him at our show, was Zay Robinson. He seems like he's kind of the outlier of all of these kind of body types and different ones. We've compared him to KJ Hamler multiple times on the show, and he's kind of that quick scat. Type of guy, give him the ball, don't know what will happen, could be a home run every single time. And man, and after that interview, what did he say? Just get him the damn ball. And he doesn't say it. And he watched that interview, and he met him and heard him talk on some interviews. He's just a very, very fun kid to be around. Great personality. So I'm really rooting for him. But yeah, he's one that I think we need to watch out for. Him and Omarion Jackson are guys that I think are going to be some names to watch for in come fifth.
Definitely. And you talk about we got a chance to interview Zay, and he was just such a great personality, so fun to talk to, not just on stage in front of everyone, but afterwards chatting with them. Kid with a great smile, and the give me the damn ball reference. And I was asking him about how he, you know, punt returner, kickoff returner, wide receiver, and he was just essentially, I want the ball in my hands. I want the chance to do something. And I used the reference, just give me the damn ball, which I don't know if you remember. It's Keyshawn Johnson. I don't think Zay Robinson understood that reference.
There's
But I think it just fit, you know, the wide receiver that wants the ball in his hands, because he's confident he can make something happen. And you just get the impression it's not just going to be effective. It'll be exciting when he gets the ball in his hands, Mike.
Yeah. And just a quick note on him. His personality really is very similar to KJ Hamler, who I was there for his recruitment. I remember he was a Michigan State lean at first, if I remember correctly. Michigan didn't offer him. So then we were the leader, and I was kind of the lead for his recruitment when he was on campus for a couple of times. Like, we would go to dinner with him and his dad and his family and stuff. So I got to meet his family and his mom. Man, they were more personable. Like, they were the show. Like, and then that made me understand, like, oh, that's where KJ gets it. But that was just a funny side story that I just remember about KJ and his family. They're the funniest family ever. They could have a reality show. But just similar personalities, just like very affectious, like very, everybody's going to love the guy on the team. But yeah, but he's a home run hitter. So that's why I really like him. You know, get him the ball. He's the kind of guy you can get him on the perimeter of the screen game, something like that. And he can, you know, turn nothing to something.
And as you pointed out, so many of these receivers are bigger guys. Chase Soule, 6'3", Omarion Jackson, who you mentioned, 6'2". They're bigger guys. So that now this Zay Robinson, the KJ Hamler type, you know, hey, that's a special kind of weapon. It'll be interesting to see how they use them. All right, Mike, that's it for quarter number three. When we come back, how about we look at the other side of the ball? We'll talk defense when we get back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by HVU Insider. I'm Jim, he's Mike. Quarter number four of our show. Mike, we spent a lot of time on the offensive side. I'm not even going to hit the offensive line. We talk about them a lot. We don't talk enough about the defense. And it's interesting, when I was preparing for the show and talking about the depth, there are some places where it's pretty obvious the depth. I'm going to go from the back forward, and I'm going to lump together the cornerbacks and the safeties. And when you start to accumulate the names that you have confidence in, there's a lot of names here. At cornerback, you're talking Darius Dixon, Audavian Collins, Zion Tracy. At safety, Jeremiah Cooper and Marcus Neal. I think those two are going to be phenomenal. Add in Jameson Patton, who's also coming over from Iowa State. There's a lot of guys in the back.
Yeah, you have some young guys, too, that are having good camps, too. You got Jameer Joseph, who flashed last year in some times at the end of the games. And then Xavier Thomas is another guy that should find some time. But, yeah, it's a deep position. And I've said it in the past. We've talked about it. The back end of our defense has a chance to be elite, especially with that nickel position that they're doing. It's like the honey badger position, I kind of call it, with somebody so athletic like Zion. In that type of position, it could be really dangerous and it can really be frustrating for offenses. But yeah, I'm really excited about the defense backfield this year. And what's really cool is Jeremiah Cooper. Like, when we had him on, a lot of people probably still didn't know about him because he's been injured, right? But the dude had 8 picks and was an all Big 12 type of player. Now he's here as a Lion. And then, you know, this past week, now you're hearing a lot of buzz about Jeremiah Cooper and the way that he looks. So kudos to the staff and the team and the way that they're handling. You know, some of these guys have been injured. You know, like Gabe Burkle is going to be coming back here pretty soon. Yep. And now, obviously, Jeremiah Cooper was one of the guys that was injured, got banged up last year and coming off an injury. But it seems like they had a really good plan for him because he looks like the guy that he was at Iowa that had 8 picks. So that's huge for us. For our defense, I thought our defense was still pretty, you know, solid and deep, you know, without the Cooper equation. And now you add him as a healthy piece to that backfield, and plus some of these emerging young guys, that can be an elite defense, elite.
And that's with Jeremiah Cooper. What I like about him also, Mike, is that Iowa State safety. Then they trusted him enough to switch him over to cornerback, that his coverage skills were good enough to do that. Now he's back and will be playing safety. And you talked also about their plan for him. And we asked, are you ready? You know, and what are the things, the hurdles that are left? And the answer was pretty much, hey, I feel great. I'm good. It's just essentially getting in game shape, getting reps in, doing that part of it. And it sounds like he's doing well with that. But it also is this, now at the base defense will probably be a 4-2-5. That gives you the opportunity to put five of these really good players on the field and getting your best 11 out there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It's kind of like the situation we're talking about with Mauser, and he's got all these good weapons and tools. It's like, okay, well, how is he going to use them to, you know, maximize the defense? So it's the same situation, right? To go back to Jeremiah Cooper and guys that are able to make the position change to safety and corner or vice versa, I learned a long time ago, I don't know if you remember the name, Terrell Buckley. He's a Florida State great returner, corner, played in the league for a while. I was on a coaching staff with him, and we were talking about moving a guy that was – we recruited as a corner, but he's a bigger guy, so we talked about moving him to safety. He taught me that is a very – that's hard to do for a corner, especially – or for a player, especially at the beginning of their playing careers, because it stunts their growth. Right here, he can stunt their growth a little bit. So to be able to do that, and now on his situation, he's an older guy, right? But you know, he's still learning a new system under Coach Lane. So kudos to him. You can tell he has a really good presence about himself. He's a confident kid. He's not cocky, but he's confident. So I really like this kid and being an added piece to this defense this year.
And yes, and sometimes. I use these interviews that doesn't tell you the player that they are, but it's amazing how the confidence they have or the personality, you see that come out in their game. And you could see to him when asking him about those 8 interceptions, this is a kid who knows what he's doing back there. The things that are important to intercept the ball, the anticipation, the film study, all those things, he has those things down. So lot of confidence I have in the defensive back as a whole. Let's move up a little bit. A linebacker, a little bit different in that the base system is going to be 2 linebackers, starting with probably Tony Rojas, definitely, and I assume probably Cooper Abel, who's transfer from Iowa State. There's some depth there. We saw some of Alex Tash last year. There's also Kale Brezina, who came in from Iowa State. And we'll talk about the defensive ends in a second, but Caleb Bacon is getting reps at defensive end, who came in as a linebacker, Mike.
Yeah, I think that's good to have some versatility with that type of kid. You know, I could see something similar, them using LeVar Arrington Jr. like that too, right? He's got that athletic body. He started as a linebacker, but now he's playing defensive end coming into this camp. So it's good when you're able to use those DNs in multiple ways like that. It's just another bullet in the chamber for the defense to throw at the offense. Tash still coming off his injury. I don't think he's 100% yet. I don't think he's going to be 100% come September 5th, but they're going to keep hopefully having him progress. He'll be somebody nice to, when he's 100% to add to the room, especially as these are long seasons, right? You're going to get dinged up a little bit. But, you got Cooper Abel at the mic. Coming in, I think he's been a staple coming in here, knowing that he was going to be the mic from day one. But Kale Brezina, I think, is a guy that we had at one of our shows that a lot of people didn't know about. But now coming into camp, there's a lot of buzz coming out about him being the backup and in the rotation. Tony Rojas is Tony. Hopefully, we just said knock on wood. He stays healthy. He's an elite player. No matter what team you put him on, he's going to be a day one, day two guy, depending on the type of year he has. Cam Smith is a name that's popped up out of camp, which is really, really nice to hear. Wasn't sure which way he was going to go with his defense and how he was going to fit, but good to see him. He's kind of helped fill the gap with Alex Dash being out and being 50-50 right now. I like the room all around. We'll see. But I think the ones that we haven't talked about that's getting a ton of buzz, which is so important, is the interior defensive line.
Yeah.
You're probably going there next. Like, you keep hearing about how much bigger they are and how much, how strong and stout they are compared to what we have had in the past. And I think, man, you know, we've had some bigger guys like the PJ Mustafers and guys like that, and even going back to AJ Johnson, you know, some bigger dudes. But a lot of times when you look back, you know, we've had some smaller than average type of guys that are quicker stunts. You know, you look at the Durants of the world. That's not our makeup now. We're these big dudes, powerful dudes that are going to hold these gaps and not going to get the ball ran down our throat. And that just makes that defensive backs even that much more elite. So I'm really excited about our defensive line. I think that was like one of the biggest questions with the fans, I think, coming into this season. And I think it's going to end up being one of our strongest positions coming out.
It's interesting in talking about it, too. It's not that they're just bigger, but what's going to be asked of them is different. And one of the things that we interviewed, I think, 20 players over the summer, Mike, and we had Cam Smith on, and I asked him about the larger guys at tackle, and it's one of the answers I've quoted many, many times. And when I asked him about it, his statement was, well, I wasn't quite sure what was happening before spring practice started. Then it kind of clicked. Oh, I get it now. Those guys are going to be there occupying, and we as linebackers, our first step isn't going to be backwards. Our first step is going to be forward.
Yeah, or laterally. Like when you know, yeah, you have the smaller athletic defensive lineman, your defense is probably more, you know, stunt driven, blitz heavy. So you're doing a lot of lateral movements, stunts and stuff like that. So yeah, I think this is going to be more downhill. And that you see the linebackers that really excel playing these defenses because they get freed up, right? And they're able to play. And what's really exciting about him is he's kind of new to the position, right? Or he's just like he doesn't have a ton of experience. So
this
might click. You know what I mean? Sometimes when it clicks for people, that's what it kind of sounds like when you talk to Cam Smith about it. So really excited to see what he can do because I don't think he was a name coming into camp that a lot of people were thinking about hearing.
No, I agree with you. Now, you know, quickly in the last minute or so we have left, at defensive end, I don't even worry so much about starters there because I like when they're able to rotate, you know, two deep, have at least four guys there. And they may not have that, a returning Danai Dennis Sutton, but they've got at least four guys there who can do something for you, and add Caleb Bacon to the process too as an edge guy. Feeling pretty good about defensive end.
Yeah, I feel good about all of them. And then you have Max Cranville, you got Kamaju, who I'm very high on. I know I say it a lot because of the departure of our guy last year going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Him having Coleman, just like an outlier season as a true freshman, created so much buzz, it kind of overshadowed Kamaju and his playing time and experience and the reps that he was getting, you know, as a young guy. So I'm really high on him. I think he's an NFL type of kid. And then you got Max Granville coming in off the injury that I think everybody's rooting for. And then Deshaun Burnett is kind of behind him, you know, younger Richards freshman this year out of Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I think we're good at the position. It's just a lot of unknowns.
Exactly. All right, Mike, that's going to be it. It went quick as always. Thank you. And thank all of you for tuning in. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.